The Rights Ricky Sanchez podcast. We're back. Here we are, brought to you by the Colony Meadery, the official gluten-free booze made from honey of the process, LL Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rights Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged. Kinetic Skateboarding, get 9.1% off your first order with promo code Dave Silver. And Cinch, C-Y-N-C-H, get your propane tank delivered straight to your door. Get your first Cinch tank exchange for $10 with promo code Ricky at Cinch, C-Y-N-C-H.com. On today's show, we debut our new intro and outro song. Huge day for us. We thank Run the Jewels for their service. Talk about Ben Simmons' contract extension, J.J. Redick admitting he's on social media, Kyle Korver choosing the Milwaukee Bucks. AU will tell us what we forgot in our big picture Sixers conversation and some fantastic mailbag questions. Before we get going, this is a tradition I started 11 years ago on when I was on the radio. I would give out my brother's cell phone number on the radio for his birthday, and it's his real cell phone number. Now I'm not on the radio anymore, but I'm on the internet. And the difference is now when I give out his cell phone number for you to call and text him is that when it was the radio, it would be this huge, big rush all at once of calls and texts. But now it lasts throughout the week because of Twitter and the podcast. So my brother Jason, it is his birthday. His cell phone number, this is his actual real cell phone number, is 215-317-3000. 215-317-3000. Please send him text messages and phone calls and make it impossible for him to use his phone today. That's what's happened in the past. My favorite thing that anyone has done is put him in a text chain with a bunch of their friends and not let him out of the text chain. Keep adding him back in, which is one of my favorites. The other one was sending him a picture of Mr. Peanut with genitalia. So those are my favorites that you have to beat. So once again, 215-317-3000. Without any further ado, here is our new intro song. Larry, sweetie, the man is here. Say the name, I say the name, I say the name. We will write. Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who, once again, may be interrupted by dogs. That is Mike Levin. Ah, still well, dog sitting.
Still dog sitting. I'm never leaving John Gonzalez's house.
It's a long vacation you're having, yeah. John and Kali. That's right. Well, that was our new song. I would like to give credit to the artists of the new song. So the song is officially titled We Was Right. And it is by Amos Lee and his musical director, Jaron Olefsky. Jaron and Amos did the last one before Run the Jewels that we couldn't use anymore. I would just like to say and first of all, thank you. The song is awesome, and it's great to have a custom song. The fact that we have a ridiculous open by an artist who had a number one album on Billboard charts and is currently on tour, like playing in front of thousands of people, and he spent, by my count, about 3 months working on the intro song for this podcast.
No, he's a very sick man. He's very he's not well. But we appreciate it.
Yeah, it's huge. I think Jason Lipschitz, I told him that he was working on the song, and he's like, I oscillate between this being awesome that Amos does this and Tony to Tony and Valone's, between it being awesome and me wondering like what is actually wrong with him. which I think is an accurate description of it. So thank you. We are proud to have a song that will not run out in a couple of years, that we didn't have to pay for, that Amos did on his own. He volunteered to do it. So thank you. It's an honor, I think I'd say, for us to have that. He plays in front of thousands of people. And he has this, I asked him, what do you think the Venn diagram is of the people who know him from this, the people who know him just from his music, and the, like, what is the crossover? Is it 10%? Is it 5%? Like how many of our people
had just heard of him?
Yeah, before? Because of the podcast. Like, what? How many of our people know of him simply from this, like, being a Sixers fan?
In terms of how many of his, how many new fans he's gotten from?
Yeah,
It's less than that. He's been around a very long time.
No. I mean, I guess not. I'm not saying 5% of his fans. I'm sorry. Like, what? I guess I don't know how you do the math on a Venn diagram. He has an enormous fan base. Let's put that. Like, he plays Red Rocks, and when he's in Philly, he just played the Met, and he plays BB&T. Like, it is funny to me, though, that every city he goes to, he gets TTP, like, yells and stuff like that. It is funny to me. So, thank you, Amos.
Thank you, Amos.
So before we get started, the Willie Green Apple Podcast 5-star review. We're at 2,441 on the way to 3,000. When we get to 3,000, I'll read all the reviews on another podcast. Subject line, an incredible listen even for a Celtics fan. The cult podcast every fan base wishes they had, an incredible collection of biased Sixers takes and hilarious Celtics hate. As an avid Celtics fan, I thoroughly enjoy the Ben Simmons overhyping and actually enjoy the slander of Kyrie Smoker's Arms Irving. The t-shirts and loyalty from listeners is hilarious. I had to buy myself an Al Horford appreciator t-shirt. Awesome pod. Only complaint is I wish it had more theses and Al Horford appreciation. As a Celtics fan, I regret not truly appreciating the incredible screens, his great shots, and most of his unselfishness. Cuss cries. So there you go. We have a good bit of fans that don't actually like the Sixers. A good bit of listeners.
No, we don't like the Sixers. So
no, I hate the Sixers.
No, terrible.
Have you ever listened to a podcast of another team-specific podcast?
Not regularly, but I'm sure I have.
I don't think I ever have. I've listened to national podcasts, obviously, but I've never listened to a team podcast. I didn't even know any existed outside of ours. Well, Light Years. I know Light Years exists, but I've never listened to it. So, and that's not a negative thing. I just don't feel like listening to a whole podcast of Warriors talk. Whatever. So the most recent Sixers news that happened, Kyle Korver, who everyone, I think, kind of assumed was going to sign with the Sixers, signed with the Bucks. Mm-hmm. According to Woj, it was the connection with Mike, regular season coach Budenholzer that he was.
That really had to hurt you when you saw that.
What? That he chose Budenholzer?
Yeah.
Well, a regular season player choosing a regular season coach is really not all that surprising when
Very
you think
true.
About it. The email we got an email from Alex, and he said, did Kyle Korver choose to sign with the Bucks over the Sixers out of fear that he wouldn't be the most handsome player on the team? Need to know Mike's thoughts on this. Mike.
Maybe. Giannis is also very attractive, so he's not the most attractive guy on the Bucks. Look, Korver's washed up on the court and off the court.
He's not good looking anymore.
No.
He is not. He went through a good looking period.
He was mid-2000s good looking, and he's not anymore. That's it.
No. Yep.
That's the official ruling.
Yeah.
I'm not worried. We haven't talked in a while because we did the Summer League podcast last week. And
yep.
And so I'm glad we didn't get caught up in all this Korver mania. But he, you know, as nice as it would have been to have a guy just to come on the court in the regular season and hit a couple shots and space the floor here and there, he would never play in the playoffs. He just wouldn't. He can't hang in the playoffs. Look at all the guys that didn't play in the playoffs for the Sixers this year. I'd rather just push through it. And is their offense going to struggle because they don't have like a JJ-esque shooter who can hit off movement and can force the defense to account for him as he's running through screens and tearing around places? Yeah, but I think that, you know, that's what the first few months of the season is for, to test it out and see how the rookies improve and all that stuff. And then they go get a guy midseason. I think that's exactly the plan and what plenty of teams have done before.
Yeah, I was never that high on getting Korver at all, to be honest with you. He's people liken him to Redick because he is white and good at three-point shooting, but Redick is way better than Korver is right now and way more able to stay on the floor. I mean, Redick is 3 or 4 years younger, I think physically in much better shape, as bad as Redick was on defense, still better than Korver, I think. Now, I don't think that's a big deal. The only thing I would say is that, not to disagree with you, but like as sort of a counter, is just because he won't be able to stay on the floor in the playoffs doesn't mean he won't be advantageous to have on the roster. You know, I do think getting through the regular season is something that they need to aim to get the 2 or 1 seed this year. I think it's important for them if they were to have home court, I just think about if they were able to have home court all the way through the playoffs, what a difference that would make for their chances to get to the finals. And yeah. I think it makes a substantial difference. And I think somebody like Korver would have helped. But that said, it's not the end of the world.
I agree with what you said. I just don't think Korver is that kind of difference maker. And if they need to go get somebody like, what's an example? Marco Bellinelli midseason, then they can go get him and they'd be fine.
Well, so I have a list of guys that are still free agents. Let me know if you'd be interested in any of them. And just to bring up your thing again, as to they can always like cut a guy and sign another guy.
Yeah.
You know, like signing. So
I love cutting guys and signing other guys.
Yeah, sure. I mean, Houston, look at how many times Houston did it. A million times last year.
Well, I also want, I'm preempting this, but the Raptors went to the EuroLeague to sign a guy named Matt Thomas, who's the best shooter in the EuroLeague, who I believe played at Iowa State and like has improved his game since he's been in college and is now like a veteran for cheap, but with like elite shooting prowess. And like I would love for the Sixers to surprise us all with some random EuroLeague guy who can come in and just hit shots and reasonably hang on defense. And it's like, oh, that's who they got. Okay, great. But they don't actually. They also don't have much money to offer anybody
to do it. Yeah. So guys, speaking of EuroLeague, funny story. So I spent a week in Portland. I was on vacation. By the way, I fucking love Portland. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. As a city, like people are nice. Like they're weird. Their commitment to the environment is pretty like crazy. If you haven't been, not crazy in a bad way, crazy in a good way. But we had a Lyft driver that played in the NBA, and he was telling me how much he loved playing in Europe. He played for the Jazz for 2 separate years. Andy Toulson played for BYU, played with Sean Bradley at BYU. It was the fucking craziest thing, yeah.
There's a bunch of Toulsons that have been in the league. There was maybe his kid or nephew or something, Ryan Toulson, played at Utah Valley. And
yeah, it was his kid. He has 4 kids. All of them play basketball. One of them is like, I guess, about to graduate high school and is looking at he told me and I was just a fucking stranger. So is looking at a bunch of schools. But yeah, it's his son. Cool. That's his son.
There's a couple really good ones. Yeah, they're just like guys who just hit shots all the time. It's crazy that like there's just a factory of shot hitting, probably Mormons from...
I think he's a Mormon. He told me he was a Mormon. Well, he insinuated he was a Mormon.
Sure,
so. Nothing wrong with that, you know. I was like, hey, Andy Reid was a coach of the Eagles for 13 years, also Mormon. Currently free agents, just throwing them out there. And by the way, I would say 3 or 4 of these I would rather have than Kyle Korver. J.R. Smith, Jeremy Lin, Thabo Sefolosha, Iman Shumpert, Vince Carter. Any interest? Any of them?
I would love Vince. Would love Vince. That would be the coolest thing. That'd be just very fun. In like a, you know, there's a clout to him that I think young guys respect. And even if, like, he wouldn't be dealing with Simmons and Embiid all the time, I think leading by example, and just being there for like, you know, Zaire and Matisse and stuff, and being like, holy shit, it's fucking Vince Carter. Like it's a crazy. He's one of the best, not one of the best players of all time, but on the top 50 lists or whatever.
And one of the first players to force his way out of town by not trying.
Sure, but that was so long ago.
I know.
And just a cool guy that people respect in a similar JJ type way. I would totally be fine with him. And I tweeted it yesterday as kind of a joke. I don't want Jamal Crawford to ever play for the Sixers, but I'd love having him as like a player coach.
Oh, yeah.
Mentor type thing to just like, you know, hit shots in practice and cheer during the games.
And when he gets on the court during a blowout.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Take
and
over.
Pacific Northwest.
Exactly. With I Matisse, actually, both Pacific Northwest guys.
I'm a longtime Jeremy Lin believer.
Sure.
But I think you can't ignore, and we'll get to this when we get to the Simmons extension stuff, but like J.R. Smith, I don't know how cooked he is or not, mm-hmm. but like theoretical J.R. Smith, I have no problem with on the Sixers.
In a vacuum, yes. But
yeah,
the J.R. Smith, you know, it still comes with the other J.R. Smith stuff. And anybody that played a role in those LeBron teams where there was like just turmoil, I was like, I don't want that to sort of touch our team, you know?
That's
but
fair.
I think there is upside to him more, obviously more than the other guys. Lin, I think they chose Neto over Lin. I don't think they'll go back to that well. Sefolosha, I'd be fine with. I just think he'd probably take some of those Zaire Matisse minutes because Brett will sort of, you know, revert back to playing the vet.
Most coaches would,
of course.
By the way.
I would just prefer if you're going to go get a veteran guy, just have someone that can really shoot. And I think Vince is still at that point in his career. And yeah, none of those guys really excite me. I think they're definitely going to keep at least one of the roster spots open. I would go for Vince and then probably just for character building, Jamal Crawford.
Having Jamal Crawford on the team, like, and I didn't mention Monte Ellis.
Sure, just, or Monte. I mean, we'll see if he can shoot. Because he was not, like, Monte.
He couldn't shoot.
I know, no, that was the thing. Yeah. He shot so much, but could not shoot. Maybe at this point in his career, he can shoot, but I have no idea.
Like Jason Kidd? I doubt it, but maybe. The Rice Ricky Sanchez this week is brought to you by Cinch. C-Y-N-C-H. Cinch, what they do is they make shit easy, right? It's the summer. You like to grill all summer. You run out of propane in your tank and you're like, oh, shit. I got to go and exchange it. I don't feel like doing that. I don't feel like leaving my house for anything. What Cinch does is they come to your house. They bring you a new propane tank. They take the other one straight to your doorstep so you can grill all summer long. No, like you don't have to do anything, Mike. All you have to do is go to the website, cinch.com, C-Y-N-C-H.com, use code Ricky, and you'll get your first tank for only $10. You got to take the dirty, first of all, the propane tank that you got to return is dirty. You got to put it in your car. You don't want to put it in your trunk because it'll roll around and you're afraid your car will explode. But you also don't want to put it in the passenger seat because it's dirty. That's just let Cinch do it. Now available in South Jersey. We had some complaints that it wasn't available in South Jersey. Cinch now available in South Jersey. Look, I get my razors delivered. I get my air filters for my air conditioning at my home delivered. I like everything delivered. Groceries delivered. Don't make me go anywhere. That's what Cinch is doing, making you be able to stay in your house, be antisocial, but still grill in your backyard. C-Y-N-C-H, promo code Ricky, R-I-C-K-Y, bring your propane tank straight to your door. Once again, cinch.com, C-Y-N-C-H, promo code Ricky. The other thing that happened, Sixers and Sixers adjacent news was the Ben Simmons contract extension, which we all thought was, I think, pretty, you know, we all knew it was going to happen. I thought it was an interesting and good sign that the first rumor to come out of free agency for the Sixers was that they were working on the contract with mm-hmm. Simmons. I thought that was, I thought it was meaningful in a, like I don't know. I saw it and I was like, that is there for a reason. Two questions for you on the Simmons extension. And then I had a comment. First, what are the chances, give me percentage chance, the Sixers win a championship by the end of the extension? And two, what are the chances, percentage chance, both he and Embiid are both on the Sixers by the end of it?
Well,
realistic chances. Realistic as Mike can get.
Yeah, I was thinking about it in terms of the Horford contract, because he's obviously getting up there, and they paid him 4 years. They are rightfully assuming that he's going to be more productive in the first 2 years of that contract than the second 2 years.
For sure.
And so there's a chance that by the last 2 years, he is, you know, closer to a three-point shooting Amir Johnson than he is the Al Horford that we've always appreciated and can, like, you know, cover the perimeter as well as a four. Like, that might, he might have to revert to a full-time backup by the last year or two of that contract. So to me, especially now that the NBA is as wide open as it is without the, you know, with the Warriors injured and the talent being a little more dispersed rather than accumulated in one or two spots, I think they're thinking it's going to be this year or next year. And they're going to go all in for it this year, next year. There's continuity this year, next year. Odds are, I mean, you know, Tobias is locked up. Josh Richardson has two more years. Embiid, Simmons, Horford, all these guys are pretty in there for this amount of time. And I think they're hoping that one of the rookies pops and can form a pretty solid core. That's your playoff rotation right there. And so I think what – are you asking me what the odds are of –
they win a championship by the end of Simmons' contract. Then what are the odds both he and Embiid are active on the Sixers by the end of that contract?
50%. I think this – I think for the first one –
50%?
Yeah, 50% in 4 years.
Oh, that's
– they're the best team in the East. The odds that they win a championship, I think – close to 50%. I.
Oh my God, that's really high. I think even if you believe
this is in five years because they extended him. It's this year.
It's just 6 years. It's within 6 years, right? Because it is a 5 year.
So it's within 6 years. I think I do. I really do. They have some of the best young players in the league, and a bunch of good guys around them, and role players, and a good coach, and continuity, and there's nobody really standing directly in their way.
50% is high. I don't know. They'll be in a conference with Durant starting next year, Giannis this year, Kawhi still exists in the other team with probably a better team than he played on this year. The Warriors will eventually return. Curry, Thompson. 50% seems high to me.
Maybe. I was taking into just like, if odds are they're going to be contenders for the next 4 or 5 years.
For sure.
And it's, I don't, look, I like what Brooklyn's done. Who knows who KD is going to be after the Achilles. Mm-hmm. You know my feelings
for sure
about Kyrie. I'm not crazy worried about them now or in the future.
I agree.
I think Milwaukee's very good, and Giannis will continue to get better, and they'll continue to surround him with players that can help.
But and then he'll go to the Raptors in 2021.
Sure. But also they, you know, they had a lot of guys on their team had career years last year, and then they had to give up Brogdon. So I think the East is ours for the taking for the next couple years. So if you're saying that the Sixers are going to get to the conference finals in 3 or 4 straight years, which I, you know, it might not happen. There might injuries, shit going wrong, whatever. But I think the way the landscape is, obviously the league changes so quickly that you can't really assume anything. But you're asking me right now. I think if you're telling me they get to the conference finals and say they get to the conference finals in 4 years, say they win two of them, and say they win one of the NBA finals.
That feels good to me. Sure. Sure. And then odds both he and Embiid are on the Sixers by the end of it. I would respect you not wanting to speculate on that.
No, I really have, I have no idea. I have no reason to assume not. It would have to be an Embiid injury or some level
or one of them saying they didn't want to be here.
Or one of them saying they didn't want to be here.
But we're Embiid, by the way. Embiid will be an unrestricted free agent before Ben Simmons's contract is over. Mm-hmm. So that's possible too.
And we've shown, you know, it's become very clear, and if it wasn't already, that all contracts are tradable if something were to go wrong in some way. But there's no reason to assume that. I think regardless of your feelings on the jump shot, like, there's no reason to assume that Ben won't continue to get better in every other aspect of the game. I'm hoping it's the jump shot. They talked about, who was I listening to? One of the Ringer podcasts where they said the over-under for jump shots, for threes that Ben takes this year is 18, which I think is a weird over-under.
It's got to be higher.
That's what they said, was 18. This was Dan Verrier. And I think that's either... I think it's an easy over. I know that he hasn't done it yet, but it's one of those, like, kind of splitting the difference to where if he doesn't shoot, then the over under is going to be like 6,
right?
And if he does,
and if he does, it'll be 58 or something. Yeah. Well, I'll give my percentages. I actually haven't even thought of it. I brought it up to you. I hadn't even thought about one. I would say the percent chance, and I actually think this is high. Not high for the Sixers. That doesn't mean I'm pessimistic. I'm just high that any team wins a championship. Mm-hmm. I would say that they are probably about 15% or 18%, something like that, that they win a championship. The odds that he and Embiid are both Sixers by the end of it, in my heart, is 100%.
Sure.
In reality, is closer to your championship odds, is probably like 50-50. Just because we've seen so much movement, which I actually think is pretty bad for the league overall. So maybe there will be an adjustment in terms of how that happens. I don't think this player movement thing is forever. So we'll see what happens. But I think probably 50%. I think it probably lasts long enough for one of these guys to either win a championship and want to do it on their own, or not win a championship and say, I don't want to play with this guy. You know, I want a different situation somewhere.
Maybe.
So.
Yeah. Maybe.
Why don't we go to the... Oh, and the other thing I will say about the extension is that... And this is maybe just a Twitter thing. I don't know. Is that, like, there is... So I think people get fooled into thinking there are only two kinds of thoughts on this. Either, obviously, Ben Simmons is great and you give him this extension and he's worth it no matter what happens. Or... Ben, this is a massive overpay, and because he can't shoot, how do you give a guy that much money if he can't shoot? And those two people just, like, argue with each other without the truth being, obviously you give him the extension, obviously he's worth the extension, but if he does not figure out how to become a more competent shooter, then it does limit the ability for him to be a great player, like a top 10 player. And it limits the ability, I think, for him to be the point guard of that team. Like, is there a chance that he never is able to shoot and, like, adjust his role and all of those things? Sure. But, like, both things can be true. And you don't have to, like, it doesn't have to be, wow, imagine thinking that Ben Simmons isn't worth this without a jump shot. Like, the jump shot thing is a real, actual thing that you shouldn't be lulled into thinking. Like, even Giannis last year, whose three-point shot is not good. But, like, in the playoffs, I think was shooting between 3 and 4 threes a game and shooting 32%.
Yeah.
If Ben Simmons was shooting 32% from three on 3 or 4 threes a game, he would be fucking unguardable.
Yeah, I mean, we'd be thrilled.
Yeah. So don't fool yourself into thinking that, like, and there was actually a really, I don't know if you read it. Did you read there's a really interesting post on Nylon Calculus about, it was mostly about Jason Tatum, but it was about the idea that taking less efficient shots, that taking the most efficient shot all the time isn't the most efficient thing to do. That if you're able to take some less efficient shots, it makes the more efficient shots easier to get. And it was mostly about Jason Tatum taking, yeah. And I think that's a real thing. And because there are some guys that would say, and I think the Rockets have proven maybe this is a problem, that shooting a three every time up the floor might work in the regular season, but does become harder when the same team is guarding you for seven straight games.
Right.
You know, I think there's some of that with Ben. And you're right, we would be thrilled. If he was shooting 32% on three threes a game, we'd be throwing parties after every podcast.
Yeah, so. And I also say about the, like, it is definitely not unheard of that you'd give a max extension to a rookie who still needs to improve aspects
absolutely
of the game. Like, that's
totally
almost all the time. Like, I the odds that Ben becomes a passable Embiid level 3-point shooter is, to me, much higher than, and much more likely than, Jamal Murray, who just got a max extension, ever defending at a level that's playable in the playoffs.
I agree. Though it is a different thing.
For sure.
I think. Of course.
But I think, you know, so one of those things is like, oh, he just has short arms and he's not that quick laterally and he doesn't try that hard. And then I'm just singling out Jamal Murray because he just got the max extension. But there's plenty of guys that's the case for. Ben is, you know, has the length and quickness and intuition to be an incredibly impressive defender, and being able to shoot threes like he does in practice and just step into him should be doable if he just decides to. So I think that that's more likely. I hear the concern about saying, like, well, he needs to shoot, but the alternative is what, letting him walk? Like, what are we doing? He's absolutely, it was absolutely the right move.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And also, I want to say, you've always been very, you know, we've like sort of dabbled in the, well, are these guys working out together? Are they talking on social media? Very cool to see a bunch of people reach out to Ben for his birthday on Instagram and stuff. And very cool to see Tobias and Ben working out together.
Well, I agree. I also think, I'm pretty sure that Ben wanted Tobias back, and I'm pretty sure that he didn't want Jimmy Butler back.
I think that's probably true.
Yeah, and I'm
this is based on, for me, no information, but I think that that's, I can assume that that's, that could be true.
Yeah, and I think it's good that he's working out with Tobias, 100%. You know, I do think, I wish, now, Joel doesn't seem like he's in the workout portion of his of his summer yet. Not that he looks fat or anything, but, like, you know, he was on vacation, then he's in China and all that kind of stuff. But I just give me a week with those two. Just post one fucking Instagram. I can't tell you how much I'm not the Instagram guy. I was never the Markel Fultz, like, Instagram shot guy. I'm never that guy. I never believe it. But if you guys, my message to Ben and Joel, give me one fucking week of Instagram photos. Give me one photo of you both sweaty, of Ben defending Embiid in the post, you guys just working out together. Just please fucking work out together. One week. Give me one week. Just give me one fucking week.
I don't even need working out together. I would love just a nice trip to a wine weekend. tour a bunch of vineyards in Napa. It's lovely.
Yep. Speaking of vineyards, let's talk about something better than wine.
There we go.
That's mead. M-E-A-D, mead. Wine is made from grapes. But mead, or rice, I guess, if you're talking about sake. But mead is made from honey. M-E-A-D. And it has no gluten in it.
None.
Like, there are, they bunker down in the Colony Meadery in Allentown, and people are picketing outside of their meadery, and they're like, put gluten in the mead. And they're like, fuck off. No gluten in the mead. Mead is somewhere between cider and wine. It's carbonated. It's wonderful. It comes in many different flavors. There is they have the barrel series, which is new. It is aged in a gin barrel. It has a 13% alcohol by volume. Which is high. Wolfie Dog, which is dry hopped, 9.5%, sort of like white winey, I would say. But then there's the ones in the cans, which are like flavored and wonderful. T-Tex, There is Mini Mead. There's Grapefruit League. Now they're lower. They're like 5 or 6%, more like a beer, I guess. But I love alcohol in a can. I think beer is best out of a can, actually, and I think the mead is also best out of a can. You can get it at any Wegmans in Eastern PA. You can get it at Urban Village Brewing Company, Johnny Brenda's, DeBruno Brothers, where you can go and pick up some cheese and crackers, and also mead, standard tap. And you can order it online if you don't want to go to any of those places or you're not in the area. Code run it back, all one word, which is out of date in terms of its relevance.
No, we ran, most of it back. Did you see the Celtics?
Some of it
the
back.
Celtics tweeted or Instagrammed run it back about bringing Daniel Tice back.
I didn't see that.
Pretty good.
You save 9.1%. off your order through the site. The offer is good through the summer at colonymeadery.com. And we're also looking for suggestions on themes and flavors for Lickface Volume 2. Just tweet them at Colony Meadery. Lickface Volume 1, available now, has Vlade on the can, and it is a pumpkin spice mead. But if they use the suggestion, they'll probably do a poster, give it to you, give you some mead. So if you have a suggestion with a flavor, at Colony Meadery. You can also, as well as those places, go and get a tour of the meadery and a tasting at the tap room in Allentown. Again, colonymeadery.com. Also, Colony Meadery, a sponsor of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez run team for the Providence Animal Center Bark in the Park 5K. Join the team. We'll have an after party with Colony Meadery. I think we're up to 36 members on the run team and almost $3,000 raised. Order at colonymeadery.com. Code run it back for 9.1% off. Must be 21 to drink. Please get buzzed responsibly. Before we get to the mailbag, JJ Redick, I know he's not on the Sixers. He's not our concern anymore, but we got a lot of tweets about this, a lot of emails about it. He did a mailbag podcast on the Ringer Podcast Network. And on that mailbag podcast, he admitted that he has a burner account on Twitter, but he claims to have done it only for NBA free agency. And he claims to not know what his username is. Both seem impossible to me. Mike, your thoughts?
Well, the username thing is very funny that he doesn't know it. Absolutely.
It's a lie.
Absolutely delightful.
Yeah.
The fact that he got a burner for free agency season, reasonable, fine, hilarious that he continues to just sail past the bit of continuing to talk about how he is or is not on social media. The level of lack of self-awareness or just total self, I can't really tell what it is, but he's going for it. The thing that I get hung up on.
That's such a good point.
Yeah.
That either he is completely unself-aware or totally self-aware.
Yeah.
It's one of the two.
I don't know.
Right?
There's no in between. The thing that I get hung up about is he just has a fucking guy named Tommy on his fucking mailbag, whatever, podcast. And he's just like, there's no introduction. There's no why this guy's there. I think I talked to John Gonzalez about it, and he's like told me a little bit. But like, just this guy who just mooches up to famous people and gets to just like be on their podcast because you're just reasonably charming. It's just like, get out of here. Who is this? I can't just like, and I'm here with Tommy, and it's like that's just no one.
They never say. So the first time that happened, the first time he did the mailbag pod with quote unquote Tommy, I'm like, I didn't hear who they said it was. So I assumed it was a Sixers employee. I actually assumed it was Pat Reese, who is their media guy. And I'm like, well, his name's not Pat. And I go through the Sixers like what's it called? Like their PR staff. And I'm like, it's nobody on the Sixers PR staff. And I'm like, well, there's no way the Ringer is flying somebody out to wherever JJ Redick is to record the podcast. Who the fuck is Tommy? Does JJ Redick have a fucking personal assistant?
No, it's not that. It's more insidious than that. It is like just a guy who is like, I might be wrong. I think it's Tommy Alter. Do you know who that guy is?
Wait a minute. I know that name. Who is it?
I'm second guessing whether that's his last name or not, but it's just a guy who just like is a producer kind of, and has a bunch of famous friends and has sort of just monetized that. And I know that that's a skill in and of itself, sure, but it's the slimiest skill. And I just don't respect it at all. And he just has him on his podcast. It's just this fucking one name eponymous Tommy.
So Tommy Alter has an IMDb, supervising producer at Desus and Mero at Showtime Network.
For sure.
I bet this
sure
is the guy.
I'm sure he's integral in the jokes.
So he's Ringer is listed on his thing. He looks like he would be the guy.
Yeah.
No offense, but it looks like he would be the guy. And he also looks like, do you remember when that guy tried to buy our podcast?
Uh-huh.
It seems like he would run in the same
circle.
Of course.
They're all the fucking same.
Oh, man. Man, that cracks me up.
Just like rich white guys with like influence for some reason.
Yes.
Just like got a bunch of hands in pockets and stuff. And their skill is like shamelessness.
Right.
And not feeling like a lack of self-worth.
Their skill is shamelessness. Oh, boy. You know, one of the things about the podcast is that you are way funnier than I am. And one of their skills is shamelessness is something I would have never said. So thank you. Before we get to AU, I want to do two quick mailbag questions. And then we'll get back to the mailbag after AU. It's a particularly good mailbag this week. The first one from Chris, which I think is a very short question, but means a lot. What if this doesn't work? Right?
Well, let us establish that we were right, even still.
Yep. As Amos said in our new intro song.
But even then, you know, we delete all the podcasts. We go to the Pacific Northwest. You never hear from us again.
I'm already in on that. Half our time in Portland was spent with me telling my wife we were going to move there. I did go to the Rip City team store, and I'm like, well, I got to get an Anfernee Simons something.
Sure, yeah.
Shockingly enough, they don't have any Anfernee Simons stuff in the team store.
Mistake. There was a big, I should have sent it to you. I think Haley O'Shaughnessy wrote a nice Anfernee Simons piece that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I read it. Yeah, it was good. Now, they do have this giant painted on a building billboard. It says thank you with the O and the U being a zero with a picture of Dame Lillard. I did get this T-shirt. So they had a T-shirt there. I wanted something that I couldn't get like online. And they had a T-shirt that said hashtag family and a picture of the Trailblazers on a plane. And Enos Kanter and Myers Leonard, who are no longer on the Trailblazers, are on the shirt. And the fact that it was not on sale, that it was full price, made me buy it. So $30.
Gotta respect it. Enos Kanter, starting center on the Celtics, by the way.
The Celtics, yep. I did sort of appreciate. So I'm in this city, and my wife asked me, she was like, well, they don't have a football team here? And I'm like, no, they actually don't have a football team or a baseball team or a hockey team. They have the Sounders, the soccer team, and the Blazers. And
aren't the Sounders Seattle?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Not the Sounders. The
Timbers.
The Timbers, right. I thought that they fucking love Damian Lillard. And while they would like to win a championship, I think they're happy sort of where they are. What it must be like to just be excited to have a superstar on your team. And that's it. Like without the expectation of a championship and all of those things. Maybe it's like sort of nice. I don't know.
Maybe. I still think that they think that it's not like they know it's not going to happen. You know, they got to the conference finals this year. If Durant had gotten injured. Wait, Durant was injured. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they thought they had a chance.
Yeah, they got it swept, even with Durant injured.
Tough.
But, and then the other mailbag question. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to analyze the Blazers, but we don't need to do this.
We don't need to do that. Yeah. And then the other mailbag question before we get to AU from Jonathan. What does it look like if you put Fat Young Spike's photo through the FaceApps age filter? So I did the age, the face app thing on my face currently with a little bit of fear that it would just make me look like my dad, but I actually looked like my grandfather on my mom's side. So it was sort of relief. I don't know what Fat Spike would look like on the face app filter. Any guesses?
I don't know. I didn't use the face app filter.
Kevin Smith, maybe.
Could be, yeah. I don't have Young Spike. You've had so many eras.
Yeah, I have. I've had a lot of eras.
It's hard to keep track.
There he is. Unterberger, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Oh, now I can hear you. Boy, you sound great.
Oh, wonderful.
You're brought to us by Kinetic Skateboarding, your local neighborhood skateboarding shop. Don't buy skateboards or Vans or Converse on Amazon or some website. Buy them from Kinetic. Support local businesses. They're good people. Ben's a good guy. Even if you don't skateboard, I don't fucking skateboard, and I get stuff from Kinetic. KineticSkateboarding.com. Use code DaveSilver for 9.1% off your first order. AU. So I was talking to AU, and he was like, what if I bring up, you know, last week on our Big Picture Sixers podcast, which was well prepared, our Big Picture Sixers podcast, AU was like, I have some things that you guys did not bring up, some concerns that you did not bring up. Can I bring those up? And I thought that was a good idea. So,
feeling pretty good about the team on the whole, there are like a bunch of little things that continue to gnaw at me about this team. And that's sort of by design, I guess, just because the team is so top heavy that it's kind of like designed to be brilliant but flawed. But I just wanted to talk about a couple of the things that are still concerning me and see whether or not you guys think they're legitimate or just sort of negligible or if I'm wrong in the first place. So, roughly descending order here. The first one is about, this is a really minor thing, but it is something I've been thinking about, is that they don't really have any tradable filler contracts this year. As much as I disliked the Wilson Chandler deal that they made last summer, because I couldn't believe we didn't even get a first rounder for him in his bloated corpse, he was like a very expensive expiring deal that we probably couldn't have made the Tobias Harris trade happen without. That trade was terrible for other reasons, but that part of it made sense. And we don't really have that this year. We have a lot of, the Josh Richardson contract is a good contract, but we can't really trade him easily unless we're getting a star in return. And all of our bench guys are either like close to minimum guys or they're too indispensable or it would take combining two or three of them together just to get one guy of note. So I'm not really sure if there's a way to upgrade this team via trade over the course of the season, at least not easily.
Well, here's why I think that is good. The Sixers, Brett Brown had four separate teams last year, all sort of mashed into one season. And that, they came together in the playoffs and managed to cobble something together. But I do think that continuity matters, and just sort of riding this out in a like work out the kinks, learn each other's preferences and styles and get better. I do think that matters. And I think the starting lineup is very, very good. I'm counting on Mike Scott to still be Mike Scott and a handful of, I think Kyle O'Quinn's going to be helpful. Neto, one of the rookies, hopefully. I don't think that they need much help outside of a shooter at the deadline or something. And I don't think that would require a bloated Wilson Chandler type contract. So I'd rather, almost tie Elton's hands behind his back and make him have to like ride this team out, with the exception of a couple, a handful of moves on the fringes, 10-day contracts, whatever.
That makes sense. I agree with that. But it does seem very likely to me that this team just kind of ends up being one guy short. And, with all those Cavs LeBron teams over the years, they were always able to make that one deal for a Kyle Korver or Channing Frye to just kind of give them that one extra guy to go into the postseason with. And I'm just not sure how we do that this year.
So basically what you're saying when you're saying tradable contract is basically bad-ish contract.
Sure, and it's weird to be complaining about having no bad contracts on the team, but that does end up, I know a lot of people wanted to keep the Jonathan Simmons deal around for this reason. I don't know.
So I think it's an interesting point. Basically, what you're talking about is a $5 to $11 million deal of a guy who is maybe slightly more than a corpse that you can put together with a protected first round pick to get one extra player.
For sure.
And while you're talking, while we will say that Mike Scott and James Ennis are in that range, that we'd be giving up one player for another player, so we wouldn't be one player deeper. We would just be one player the same.
Exactly.
I think this is the argument for not, and somebody brought this up to me on Twitter, and I apologize because I don't remember the name. This was the argument for re-signing TJ to sort of like a little bit higher deal, maybe $5 million a year, because he is a a 2-year, $10 million deal for TJ does not ruin you, as we still have a roster spot open, and is also tradable. I think that is a reasonable. I think it is a reasonable thing to think, and it is. I don't know if it will kill them, but when you look at the Bucks when they traded for what's his name, the big tall white guy,
Mirotić.
Mirotić, you know, that's he's making $11 million, and the Sixers don't really have $11 million to trade unless they're packaging two guys who are in the rotation and important.
Yeah.
So I think that's reasonable. And speaking as a side contract thing, they gave so the Shake Milton deal, per Derek Bodner's post on The Athletic, was like, so it's a 4-year deal, which we all knew. Do you know 3 years of it are guaranteed? Like,
good.
No.
Good.
No. Fuck off, man. Like that is a we gave Robert Covington a deal that had 1 year guaranteed. TJ McConnell a deal that had 1 year guaranteed. Who are we bidding against to get the Shake Milton deal to be 3 years guaranteed? Like, I don't know. Unguaranteed contracts are useful in trades, and we've seen the Rockets use that. That the trade for Chris Paul had some unguaranteed contracts in it, and the ability or the trades around that. There was no need to give Shake Milton 3 years guaranteed.
Each year is under $2 million. I'm thrilled with it.
No need to
thrilled
give him,
with it.
No need to give him 3 years.
Guarantee more years. I would like. That. I think they could. $11 million is hard to get to, but I think they could get close-ish with if they decided to try to go get somebody and trade it, like if they didn't think Zaire was going to make it
right
on as be a helpful player on his rookie contract
or Thibel,
so they could do like a Zaire and Jonah trade to get to 5 and then get somebody. I don't want that to be the case. I hope it's not.
Maybe that is the answer, or maybe the answer is just hoping that one of those guys pops. I got more of that, about that stuff coming up later anyway. So moving on. This one we already talked.
Right,
yeah, we already talked about this a little bit, I think, in one of my last appearances. But I am worried that this is the year that that Joel Embiid starts to get a little bit annoyed. Partly because now Simmons is paid and now he's going to be around for a while, and maybe they start to be a scrape off against one another, or maybe it's because JJ and Jimmy are gone, or maybe it's just because people keep hounding him about his conditioning, playing too much, not playing enough. If he has to start sitting for rest games, maybe that becomes a narrative. And I we just see these guys, these homegrown guys that it's all sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows for the first 2 or 3 seasons, and then the stuff that was sort of annoying at the beginning becomes really annoying in years 4 and 5. And I'm worried this is the start of the is the clock already ticking on Joel Embiid type narratives with this team.
Maybe. I thought that getting Horford I think mitigates some of that.
But Horford could also be he could also just be an irritation to JoJo just having one of the other most important guys on the team do a lot of the same stuff that he does and play the same position technically.
Yeah, I'll say that I believe that the letting Redick go in exchange in some ways for Horford was likely not thrilling to Embiid. I will say that, I guess, pretty confidently. But I think probably that has settled down. But to your point, these things all pop up when the team is not successful.
Sure.
And I think a lot relies on, it's a good point. Like, right, if they start off 6-5 and shooting is a thing, or the offense looks clunky, or, the Embiid Horford thing is not a great fit to start, or even the Embiid Simmons thing has not grown any. I think that, JoJo has shown a propensity to sort of, and I don't say whine in a bad way, but whine publicly.
Sure.
When he doesn't like the way that things are going. So I think it's possible. I don't think it's likely, but I do think it's an interesting thing to bring up.
Yeah. There's risk kind of everywhere. I think the JJ thing we've talked about is could be problematic just because Joe liked playing with him so much. But I think he also will like playing with Horford and will like having a now not one but now two with Kyle O'Quinn playable backup centers that he doesn't feel like he has to kill himself to play 44 minutes in a playoff game to just keep the team afloat. Possible. I know there was an article I think from either Derek or Rich, I don't remember, that said that Joel was urging Tobias to run it back, and I do think that there is a, as much as the team will miss JJ, I do think that there is a togetherness and unity among this group, and like a, just like a bunch of good guys that surround Ben and Joel, of like guys who know what the role is and know that they can, like Tobias is probably a first or second option anywhere else. He's going to be the third most important player here, but he'll also kind of get to operate sometimes as if he's the first option, because he can handle the ball and shoot a little bit. And like Tobias and Josh Richardson being like very close because they both went to Tennessee, and you know, all that, Tobias and Ben working out together, we talked about like all that stuff, Horford being just a good solid vet in the locker room that I think garners a lot of respect. I think all of that stuff adds up, and that's why I would be campaigning for a Vince Carter type free agent signing at the last one. Just be like another guy that can create a fun, stable, good locker room that everybody can sort of do their thing and mesh the personalities around our two like leading men.
Yeah, and that's all fair. I think you guys are generally right that if things are good with the team on the court, then they'll probably go with the team off the court too. But I think if we have another season like we had last year where the season just kind of goes in these fits and starts and there are these weird pockets where the team can't seem to win a game for 2 weeks, I do think it's going to be tough for Joe to kind of play the good soldier throughout all that. And I hope that if he does have grievances, that he actually does continue to air them publicly. Like, when I'm going to get really worried is if like we don't hear anything from Joe for weeks, but then like, you know, Woj reports rumors of his agent kind of complaining about it, or like if it's kind of through the grapevine stuff as opposed to just Joe speaking his mind after the game, I think that's going to be even worse. So I'm hoping that kind of everything stays above board, and that if there is a problem, then that it's open and settled pretty quickly.
Yeah, and it's not like nothing that the two biggest stars on this team are represented by CAA and Clutch.
Mm.
Like that, it's not nothing. I'm not telling you it's everything, but it's also not nothing. And these agents and shoe companies like run the NBA in a lot more significant way than you would expect or hope. And the fact that like two of the biggest ones are the two of the competing ones represent the two separate stars that are on the team. And Mike, to your point, which is good, Tobias Harris represents a guy who benefits both of those players. I think anyone who can shoot really can help both of those players. But AU, to your point, a guy like Butler, somebody like Embiid might see a lot more value in than and his agency might see a lot more value in than somebody like than Ben Simmons would. So I think, you know, I think that will be something to keep an eye on as well. So what's your next
thing? This has been talked a lot of, I think, in a bunch of places, but it does kind of concern me that Mike Scott is our best bench guy. Now, the seven-man rotation did work pretty well in the playoffs, and I think Rich Hoffman wrote this on The Athletic recently, but the team's sixth man is essentially Al Horford at this point, that, you know, he'll play probably kind of token minutes to start, and then, you know, he'll play more when Joel sits early, and he'll essentially be our bench unit unifier. But it does worry me that there's no real like change of pace guy off the bench. You know, TJ's gone. There's no guy that we can kind of throw in as a wrench. And there's no guy that's really that dynamic, a playmaker or a scorer, or really a threat in any significant way. There's nobody, if I was an opposing team, I'd be like, oh shit, they're bringing that guy in. And I guess the one possible exception to that would be if Zaire pops this year. But I don't think anybody's really expecting him to do that essentially as a rookie. And that seems like a lot of pressure to put on him anyway. So it's a pretty flat bench unit. It's once you get past the first five, there's not a ton else to offer at this point.
Well, I would say in terms of other of the opposing team being frustrated by like, oh, a guy's coming in, I think it will be with how overwhelming the defense is. Like the starting lineup is going to be a very hopefully the best defensive starting lineup in the league, and then you can bring in a guy like Zaire and Matisse, and even James Ennis and Kylo Quinn, like guys that can hang and do things and be physical. I think that's imposing and something that other teams won't be able to match.
So just general relentlessness?
Yeah, relentlessness and depth defensively. I hear what you're saying about lacking like a change of pace guy, like, you know, J.J. Barea or something to freak people out and get hot, Patty Mills, whatever. And maybe one of those guys is available at the deadline. I think that is if you're looking for what is a hole in this team, it is either a shooter or someone that can, you know, really put pressure on the defense off the drive. I think Neto is good, and I think he's going to be fine, but he's not, you know, super imposing on any level. I think they rightfully think that over the course of the season they can identify what the problems are, and then there is something to be said about, as much as I do want continuity, one extra guy, like a burst of like there's a I don't want to use a Brett Brown, but like there's a spirit of like, oh, we got another guy.
For sure.
It's December, it's January, whatever. Oh, here's a, like, reinforcements are here. And this is sort of a fun thing, and everyone can be like, okay, now this is what, now we adapt to this. I don't want the team to have to change its entire makeup and DNA over the course of the season, but one extra guy in December, January that can fill a hole that they have identified that they actually need over the course of the first couple months of the season, I think that'll be helpful.
Yeah, AU, I started thinking about this when AU and I were discussing over text the Mike Scott Mutual Thirst Society, and he mentioned that Mike Scott was the best guy off our bench. And my first inclination was like, well, that's fine. Mike Scott is fine. And then I thought, well, the best guy off of the Raptors bench was Fred VanVleet.
It was also Serge Ibaka, though.
Well, Serge Ibaka and Fred VanVleet, but I'm saying Fred VanVleet is good. Fred VanVleet is much better than Mike Scott. Right? And then the Warriors, until they like made the switch and had injuries, like, you know, Andre Iguodala came off the bench.
Or even Leandro Barbosa in those first couple seasons. Like, they just had one guy that was like, oh, okay, that guy's going to come and he's going to do some stuff for 10 minutes.
Well, and the Clippers have Lou Williams. And I do agree that there's an offensive guy off the bench that it would be nice to have. And not even just off the bench, like AU, you weren't on for this, but when we were talking about like the last roster spot and we're talking about J.R. Smith, there is, as much as we poo-poo it, and I think Tobias Harris is this guy until further notice, there is the, okay, last shot, who has to create a shot in isolation or off the dribble, like, question. And a lot of times that question is solved by your best player, but I don't think that question is really solved by our first or second best player. Mm-hmm. So I think
it will be, though. I think that they're going to want the ball dumped into Embiid or Simmons penetrating the end of the game. And whether that's the most successful thing this year or something that they have to just work up to and get better at over the course of the season because they weren't good enough at it last year, I think that was the conscious choice that they made when they didn't bring Jimmy back. And
I agree.
Who knows, you know, whatever. They said, like, I still think that they did offer Jimmy the 5-year max, and once he didn't want to do it, it was pivoting from that and being like, okay, well, we're going to double down on our two guys and make them the stars of it. And if our two best players, we can't get we need a bucket out of them, then we're gonna fail with them. But we're gonna live and die with our two guys and make them feel like they're the priority, not some, you know, mercenary locker room, you know, problem.
No, I agree. I would love for Ben Simmons to be that guy. I think it's hard for Joe just because of where his offense comes from. Now, I do think it's possible that him at 17 feet facing up could be more that guy. But in the post, not. All right, one more, AU. Give us one more.
I'll try to get through the second one quickly.
It's just an argument for... I also think there's an argument for just, you know, splitting up the starting lineup and staggering minutes of Josh and JJ, Josh and Ben, and then Tobias, and like making sure at least one of those guys is on the court at all times. So it's, they can be the lead guy handling, distributing, and... you know, Zaire and Matisse and whoever can sort of stand in the corner and do their thing. So it's not all of a sudden here's the 5-man bench unit that comes in. You know. Yep.
I'll combine the last two. So the last two are essentially one that there's no real bread and butter plays left with this team. There's not, if you know, just as you're talking about down the stretch last year in the playoffs, the two go-tos were Joel and JJ, dribble hand off the top of the key, or give the ball to Jimmy Butler and either set a pick for him or just have him take his guy off the dribble. But obviously both those guys are gone and there's no real obvious replacement for them either. Josh Richardson can maybe do a little bit of that stuff, but we haven't really seen it. And he's just not, he's not known as a kind of closer guy that you can just kind of give the ball to and let him do his thing. And there's obviously no shooter that really compares to JJ. And I guess it sort of goes hand in hand with the other one, which is, I don't think a lot of people have talked about this, but I think this team is totally screwed if Ben Simmons gets hurt, or if he has to miss time for any extended period for whatever reason, or just general, like when he sits, I'm not sure what this team does. You can maybe get away with Richardson playing the point for a little while, but TJ's gone as a backup option. Butler's gone as the kind of guy to run the offense when Simmons sits. And I could see us having a universe where Ben ends up being like where the plus minus with Ben on and off the court is as extreme as it was with Joel last year, just because there's really no one that does the other things that he does. He is now the hardest to replace guy on the team.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, I agree. They don't have. I think that the Tobias Harris as initiator of pick and roll will have to be like part of their signature. He was successful with it with the Clippers, and I think he can, because both he and Joel can shoot. Joel, theoretically, I 1,000,000% believe in Joel as a big man shooter. I think the only problem with a Tobias Harris Joel pick and roll is that like they're probably dealing with guys that are guarding them who are of similar size and doesn't create much of any mismatch, you know, because one's 6'8 and one's 7'2. But I think you're going to see, I think you'll see more of that. And hopefully with a, look, so much of this comes down to whether Ben Simmons can shoot at all. If he can shoot at all, like, you know, we didn't really run any Ben pick and rolls, and he's our point guard. So, and you know, some of the, I forget who it was, some of the most successful teams in the league did not, the Warriors being one of them, did not run a lot of pick and roll. And I was even thinking about it when I was listening to Open Floor and they were talking, I hate D'Angelo Russell and I think he sucks. But I think to myself, well, what if the starting lineup was Russell, Richardson, Harris, Simmons, and Embiid? Is that better than Horford? Because here's a guy who can initiate pick and roll, who can shoot, all of those sorts of things. I think it's an interesting question. So,
I think Embiid needs to become a better screen setter and roller. Mm-hmm. There's really no reason why he isn't better at that. Maybe he doesn't like it. I don't know, but he should be one of the most effective pick and roll players in the league as the roll man. And he hasn't been. Horford is. Horford's very good as a screen and roll, pick and pop type guy. And so I'd love to see that when Joel's off the floor. And I would love them to just implement a ton of that and Joel to get better over the course of the season, whether that's with Simmons or Tobias or Josh or Neto or whoever initiating the pick and roll. In terms of replacing guys, like, does Golden State have like a replacement for Draymond? Like, if Draymond's not there, like, aren't they fucked too? I think there's a level of fucked that every team would be without their best player. And so I think no one has the luxury of like, the Sixers now have the luxury of Horford and Embiid, and to a lesser extent in limited minutes, Kylo Quinn, being like, no matter what happens, we're gonna have a pretty elite defensive big man in there, and that is a luxury. They can't have that luxury with their a 6'10 point guard with elite defensive abilities.
Well, and
that's totally right and that's totally fair. But I just worry that we get to the point where we got to with Joel at the end of last playoffs, where it's like, okay, we need to play Simmons 42 minutes in this really big game, and then we're like, for the 6 minutes that he's out, we're just like kind of biting our nails. Like, what are we doing? We got to get him back. Like,
I agree. And monitoring those minutes over the course of the season and making sure Richardson gets run as the backup point guard and Neto is playable and hopefully Shake, like those kinds of things, just stealing minutes where you can of the lesser guys with the starting lineup to sort of balance it out, I think is going to be important, whether that's Ben taking nights off here and there or just trying to limit his minutes as much as possible. I think that's super important.
Yeah. And that's part of investing in like a top heavy roster. You know, they're going to have four guys on $30 plus million a year contracts starting next year. And that's part of it, is that when you lose one of them, the Warriors faced that this year. And they had a top-heavy contract full of, like, two of the four best players in the NBA, or two of the three best players in the NBA. And they, so you're right. I'm really fucking aching for you to say your sign-off, to be honest with you.
All right, well, can I ask you about something not explicitly Sixers-related first?
Sure, go for it.
What do you guys think of the Netflix show I Think You Should Leave?
I've not seen it.
I like it. I enjoy it. It became a sensation, especially in Sixers Twitter, and I'm glad they're having a good time. I think it is. It is. I think it's a good show. I'm not all in, but I do think it's good.
I barely watch all any right. TV shows. I don't watch a lot. And per Chris Ryan's request, I watched the first episode of Too Old to Die Young, and I'm fucking way all in on that. And until I'm done with that, I won't watch any shows.
All right, well, I don't know that show. I don't really have like a super take on this show, except that it just kind of shows you how subjective comedy is as a thing. I've watched two episodes and like a couple other skits that get referenced a lot on Sixers Twitter. As you say, it's basically like been elected the official show of Sixers Twitter for the last year.
Yeah, it's
yeah, for sure. And I have to watch like a couple of the skits just to get the jokes. And now I feel like I actually get the jokes less now that I've watched the skits. And that's sort of the thing, is that, like, I don't know, a good skit for this show for me is just one where I'm able to identify where the joke was supposed to be, like, where it's like, okay, I get what they were trying to do there. I don't think it's that funny, but I get what they were trying to do. But like the great majority of the ones that I've seen are just me watching till the end of the skit, waiting for the thing to happen, and it never quite does. And a lot of the skits seem like they're the same version of that kind of non-existent joke. And I don't know, like, I'm not trying to overrule Sixers Twitter on this matter. And I leave room open for the possibility that, like, one of these skits will click with me and then the rest of them will kind of click from there. But for now, I cannot express how little I enjoy the show. And if you're out there,
wow.
you don't get the show, you're part of Sixers Twitter, you're also feeling kind of very left in the dark on this, and you want to make me feel like I'm not alone in this, like, just let me know. Give me a shout out. You can be anonymous, whatever. But yeah, don't get it. Can you guys not hear me? Did I go here?
It wouldn't be a complete AU appearance without some sort of internet problem when I couldn't hear him in the end. So
I heard most of that.
AU, fucking say your sign off.
Tim Robinson, get off my gold.
There we go. All right. Get out of here. The worst part about it, I love AU. The worst part about it is that when he has that internet problem, it makes me have to go in and fucking fix everything, which causes like 45 minutes of more extra editing for me, which is unbelievable. All right. We have a couple of mailbag questions we have to get to. But before we do, let's talk about our sponsor, LL Pomorski Jewelers. Wait, I mean, AU only finds places that don't have internet. Who doesn't have internet anymore? Like, good internet. Congratulations, by the way. Speaking of LL Pomorski Jewelers, to James, who claims to be number 130. Of LL Pomorski Jewelers engagement ring sold the rights to Ricky Sanchez. Listeners, July 20th, 2019, he proposed to his fiance. She said yes. There's a picture of James C. on the beach with his lovely fiance holding her up in the air, and he claims to be a real person who actually got engaged. Mike, your thoughts on him being a real person?
I'm suspicious.
Everyone's suspicious. LL Pomorski Jewelers now, I believe, 139 rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners who have bought engagement rings from LL Pomorski Jewelers. LL, you know, I think the summer is a quiet time for LL Pomorski, but we are very close to it being fall time, which is when it gets actually busy. People start getting married, they start proposing. So now's a good time to get in at LL, less busy. Get yourself an engagement ring. Get yourself a nice gift for your significant other. I don't know. Get yourself a nice gift for your fucking mom. Get yourself a nice gift for somebody. You walk into LL Pomorski, you are helped by LL, not by a salesperson who is on your back, you know, pressuring you with every move. Everyone that goes to LL says the guy just spends a lot of time with them and makes sure that they're happy with their purchase. And for Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners, you get two things. First of all, LL is going to give you the special engagement ring box, which fits in your pocket. It's flat, not a big one, which you can't fit in your pocket, which I had to deal with when I got engaged. And we'll pay for your first year of ring insurance. He hasn't mentioned that in a while, but I'm saying it. He'll do it now. LL is at 707 Walnut. You can reach out to him on Twitter at LL Pavorsky or go to llpavorsky.com and send him an email from there. As we always say, if you make an appointment with him for an engagement ring, it makes the process a lot smoother and quicker. And for every podcast, LL makes generous donations to the Providence Animal Center and Coded by Kids, also a sponsor of our Providence Animal Center Bark in the Park 5K team. LL Pavorsky Jewelers.
Hot Jeweler Summer 2019.
Two more questions from the mailbag. You can send us mailbag questions at writesrickysanchez@gmail.com. Hi, Spike and Mike. Maybe with three. This is from Johnny Boots. Let's say you have the power to go back in time and change one event, a trade, a free agent signing, a draft pick, etc., in the NBA from the end of the 2012-13 season until today. The catch is that the event cannot directly involve the Sixers in any way. For example, you can't change our 2015 draft pick at 3 overall to be Porzingis over Okafor. You can't reverse the Hinkie resignation. You can't undo trading up for Fultz. You can select an event that has butterfly effects that eventually ripple to include the Sixers. With those stipulations in mind, what single event could you change that would have the biggest beneficial side effect on the Sixers? Mine is obvious, so I don't know if...
Yeah, are you saying Kawhi is in Toronto?
Yeah.
Or getting traded to Toronto?
Yeah, I think that's it. I don't think that
pretty
there's...
obvious.
Because I go back and I just basically think about Eastern Conference. And, like, you know, I guess I could say maybe the Celtics take somebody other than... hate him, but like I don't even know what any of that is.
Markelle Fultz hits more shots in his Celtics workout. Is that
that's a cheap way of doing it, but I respect it. It's got to be Kawhi, right?
I think that's the this is a very clearly obvious one. There's a more fun one that's like, you know, Steph Curry not having ankle problems, which allowed him to sign a cheaper deal, which allowed them to get Durant because the salary cap was more bloated than we thought because they didn't like smooth the salary cap stuff like that. That's for the Warriors dynasty, but I, you know, the Sixers of the past couple of years weren't getting there anyway, so
right.
that doesn't super matter. No, I think those are it.
Yeah. All right. Next one. This comes from Eric. Next one's from Eric Jr. This one comes from David. Who plays more this season, Thibault or Smith? Smith has been in the system a year and seems to have a good basketball IQ, but Thibault is older and might have more experience from college and is a better shooter. Also related question, Embiid is out for load management. Who is the Sixers, who is in for the Sixers with 2 minutes left in a 3-point game? My gut says James Ennis first, and then maybe as the season goes, Smith or Thibault as they get better. So first question, who plays more, Thibault or Smith?
I would guess Thibault at this point.
I would guess too. His ability to shoot off the catch seems like more, and he's got a Smith has bulked up a little bit, but Thibault still has, I think, more of an NBA ready body to play to guard multiple positions. And Embiid is out for load management, so Horford is in, Simmons is in, Tobias Harris is in, Josh Richardson is in. Who is the other guy that's in? I actually think it's probably Mike Scott.
I'd probably say Mike Scott.
Yeah, over Ennis, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that'll be depend on matchup, but I would err on Mike Scott's shooting ability because especially without JJ.
And final question. This comes from Eric Jr. Dear Spike and Mike, since it's the off season. Oh, by the way, confirmed off season guest so far. Andy Greenwald will be on of the Ringer and Briar Patch. Tass Mellis from the former Starters, the former Basketball Jones, has agreed to come on as well. And Rights to Ricky Sanchez theme song writer and singer Amos Lee has agreed to come on. So we're working on others as we speak. Mike had a good idea to get some people on who represent other teams in the Eastern Conference. Obviously, Tass is a Raptors devotee to some level. So, but we'll find a Celtics person and a Bucks person as well.
And taunt them and probably make them never want to come back.
What's that? Oh yeah. Yeah. And you're right.
Yeah. I was thinking even deeper. I think I think there's a bunch of people in the East that we can insult.
Sure. We can insult everybody.
Got a long offseason. Why not? Let's learn about other teams.
So this comes from Eric Jr. Since the offseason, I think there's no more appropriate time to discuss something as important as what I'm about to ask you. When constructing a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, do you simply apply the peanut butter to one slice of bread and jelly to the other, or do you apply peanut butter to both slices of bread and then a thin layer of jelly between them? I, for some reason, imagine the two of you on opposite ends of this debate. Since we are always right around here, I would love to know what the right way is to make the world's greatest sandwich. P.S. There is a difference. You can't say there isn't. If you think there is, try it.
Well, clever and astute listeners of this podcast will know that I am deathly allergic to peanuts, so I would not make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. So the question is void. I do love almond butter.
I was going to say, because I don't eat peanut butter anymore either. I do eat almond butter as well.
And so when I'll make toast and I will do open face. Almond butter and jelly on one side, almond butter and jelly on the other. Two pieces of bread. I think too much in a sandwich. Because I didn't grow up with peanut butter and jelly, obviously, and I'm new to almond butter. The idea of putting it together in one bread sandwich just feels like so much bread. It feels just like very bread dominant. So I like doing the open face.
So I ate peanut butter for a long time. I recently, I would say about a year and a half ago, switched to almond butter as peanuts and other legumes promote inflammation. And I'm old now and I worry about inflammation in my hip and my back. So I switched to almond butter. I actually don't do either of the two. I do more similar to you. I do one slice of bread that has almond butter on it and then jelly and then just close it up. And that's it. I don't want to have too much of the almond butter because then it's a little sticky. I will say that a perfect sandwich, if you've never had it, is two slices of toasted bread, almond butter, thinly sliced green apple, and sriracha. It's a fucking wonderful sandwich. You should eat it. I know it doesn't sound natural, but it's a wonderful sandwich. Hmm. Yeah. Well, that's all I got. And here we are. The podcast is back, heading into true off-season form with Andrew Unterberger's internet not working and us having guests on. So
deep off-season. Really, it's so as short as the off-season always seems to be, it always feels long when you think about it in terms of the podcast.
When you have to talk for 2 hours each week about the Sixers and they're not playing or doing anything else, yes, it does seem like an awfully long time.
I do think we should. I feel like Josh Richardson has gotten a little bit of a short shrift.
I agree.
With us. I think we might need to do a little more diving into Josh Richardson in the weeks to come.
Should we get a Heat person on?
Maybe.
Hmm.
Maybe.
Hmm.
And also we could talk about Jimmy with them too. Okay. Yeah. Heat are in too.
Okay.
All right, good.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Are you down with TTP?
Yeah. You know, look face.
We were right, y'all. We were right. Even when it went wrong, we were right. We was right, y'all. We were right. So say the name. Say the name. We were right, y'all.